You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. You've likely heard of the Trail of Tears when more than 4,000 Native Americans died in a series of forced removals from their homeland in the southeastern United States to present-day Oklahoma. They were members of the Cherokee, Seminole, Muscogee, Chickasaw, and Choctaw nations. But there was another Trail of Tears, much closer to us. The Sandy Lake tragedy of 1850. Hundreds of Ojibwe people died as the U.S. government tricked them into leaving their homes in the Upper Great Lakes and traveling to northern Minnesota. It's known as the Chippewa Trail of Tears or the Wisconsin Death March. Author Robert Downs is here with us. His new novel, Windigo Moon, is set among the Ojibwe some 400 years ago. Robert, welcome. Good to have you with us.
So wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
So this is the month when the Ojibwe, also known as the Chippewa, remember their Trail of Tears. And remind us why this all happened.
Well, back in 1850, the administration of President Zachary Taylor hatched this unlawful plan to remove the Ojibwe from the Upper Great Lakes to reservations west of the Mississippi. And the idea was to seize Indian territory that had lots of timber, ore, and farmland. The treaty said that the Native people could remain on the Upper Great Lakes. What this was an attempt to coerce them to move west of the Mississippi. And what they did was they moved the annual allotments 150 miles to the west into Sandy Lake, Minnesota, so the people would be trapped there for the winter.
So this was treaty busting.
You're absolutely right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's such a common and terrible story. The way you described it, the government basically tricked the tribes, kind of set them up in a trap to get them off the land by saying, all right, your allotment will be given to you, but you got to travel for it.
Right. This was a secret plan hatched by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They used to get their annual allotments at the west end of Lake Superior at a place, La Pointe, Wisconsin. And they said that for 1850, they were going to make them go 150 miles further west to Big Sandy Lake, Minnesota. Well, a lot of the Michigan Indians flatly refused to make the trip, but more than 5,000 of them did travel in the fall by canoe and on foot across the Upper Peninsula in Wisconsin. And then they were stuck there in October, very lightly dressed and with very little food, not prepared for the winter. And then these supplies that they'd been promised didn't arrive because they hadn't been appropriated in time by Congress.
Wow. I mean, when you stop and you just piece this all together, it is jaw-dropping in the way these people were treated.
Well, a lot of the people, they didn't have any shelter, so they were sleeping underneath their canoes in the snow. 150 of them died of exposure and measles and dysentery and starvation. They got some supplies of rotten pork and moldy flour in December, but it just wasn't enough. And the terrible thing about this was that the governor of the Minnesota Territory and the Indian agent knew that these supplies weren't coming, but they didn't warn the people. And after that, you know, deep in the winter, the survivors set out for home, and, you know, there was no way to travel by canoe then. So they had to walk all the way hundreds of miles back across the Upper Peninsula. And that's where the Wisconsin Death March came in, because overall, 400 people died on the trek home.
So the people do the Wisconsin Death March and return to their homeland with many having died. Then what happened?
A couple years later, in 1852, a tribal leader named Chief Buffalo, he set out from the Apostle Islands on a 10-week trip to Washington, D.C., because he's trying to forestall an uprising and also secure the Ojibwe homeland. And Chief Buffalo was 93 years old at the time, but he set out with his party in a birch bark canoe. They paddled hundreds of miles along the shore of Lake Superior. They got a steamship and then a train to the east, and they arrived in New York with like a dime in the pocket of their white friend and advocate, Benjamin Armstrong. Along the way, they gathered thousands of signatures from miners and lumberjacks and farmers supporting their cause, because these people, these white immigrants, were themselves under the iron heel of 19th century capitalism. So there was some outrage over what had happened in the nation's press, and some sympathy that did help the Ojibwe people out a great deal. When they got to Washington, they were turned away by bureaucrats who said they'd made an illegal journey there. In a lucky break, they went to a restaurant and met an official who gained them an audience with President Millard Fillmore. Fillmore was really touched by their story, thought about it a few days, and then he revoked the order to move the Ojibwe west of the Mississippi.
So that secured their homeland.
Well, yes, because it cleared the way for establishing the first 8 reservations in the upper Great Lakes, which Chief Buffalo also negotiated. So he's quite a hero to the Ojibwe people, needless to say.
And you stop and you think he was 93 years old when he made this journey.
Yes, in a birch bark canoe on Lake Superior. And I don't know if you've ever paddled along Lake Superior, but, you know, it's...
Not for the faint of heart. What should we remember today, Robert, about the Chippewa Trail of Tears? What needs to be remembered and recalled?
I think we should think about Native Americans in general, because here in the Upper Great Lakes, they've lived here for 9,000 to 11,000 years. And you walk outside your door, you walk in their footsteps, you know. The Ojibwe people have been here for about 1,000 years, somewhere between 500 and 1,000 years. And I think it behooves us to think about their culture and their traditions, because in many ways, they were better than us. They gave thanks for their food that they ate. Generosity was their highest virtue. Kinship and family relationships were extremely important to their survival. So there's a lot we can learn about the Native people of the Upper Great Lakes.
And there's certainly a lot to learn about how not to govern when you look at the way that the federal government treated these tribes across the country, with forcing them to sign one-sided treaties, and then when it's convenient, smashing that to smithereens and forcing them to do something else. It's a dishonorable history that you lay out for us. Robert Downs is going to be speaking about his book, Windigo Moon, and talking about the Chippewa Trail of Tears, coming up Monday, November 20th at 7 p.m. at Nicola's Books in Ann Arbor. So it should be a very interesting evening. And it's a good time, as you say, to remember this in November, the Trail of Tears, the Wisconsin Death March that the Ojibwe people endured. Robert, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Hey, thank you. I say chi megwich, big thanks.